You know, a lot of times people will actually, they will notice that somebody goes to a psychologist and they'll go for years and they don't get any better, and very often they get worse. Or they go to a psychologist and next thing you know they're engaging in all sorts of immoral behavior, or things get a little strange. And there's certain reasons for this, which I think will be disclosed through the course of this talk, but there's certain things I would like to talk about before I explain why that happens to people, and also discuss the actual dangers of modern psychology. Usually when people see that I've written a 3-volume work on psychology, it's, you know, you kind of get into apologetic mode. You know, it's not like the other stuff out there is what you want to tell people. But in order to kind of lay the groundwork, I'd like to start with a distinction which in the medieval period they used to make in every science. There are 3 constituents. That is what they call the material object, the formal object, and the method. The material object is the thing you're studying. So in the case of biology, you're studying, you know, living things and that kind of thing. In chemistry, you're studying chemicals and that type of thing. And then the formal object is the perspective that you take on it. So human beings can be studied from a biological point of view or from a chemical point of view, or they can also be studied from a theological or a philosophical point of view. So you can have the same material object but looked at from different points of view. And then, so as a result, you can have different sciences. And then that perspective that you take on it determines the method, because obviously the method that is used in biology is different from chemistry, is different from philosophy, is different from theology. And so there's the method is determined based upon the particular viewpoint you take in relationship to the thing you're studying. Now, the upshot of all this is that the sciences are not just the empirical sciences. A science is defined as an organized body of knowledge of things through their causes. In other words, I have a scientific knowledge about something because I know what causes it, what brings it into being, what affects it, that type of thing. Okay, well, what this means is in the context of psychology is that the Council of Vienna formally defined that a human being is a composite thing. He's composed of body and soul. And so we're not just strictly an animal. An animal is alive, but it doesn't have an immaterial soul, and so it's a little bit different. Also, there are certain operations which human beings perform which are immaterial. For example, there's certain kinds of thought that we can do. For example, just to reflect in upon yourself, think about your own thought, that type of thing. That's something that you'd hear a philosopher say, think about your own thought, you know. But and also acts of the will, these are things that occur independently of matter. In other words, there's certain faculties, certain capacities we have to do certain things which are entirely immaterial. And then part of our intellect is also material, that is, we have a brain and that type of thing. And so the brain, or the intellect in man, is a composite between the brain and a certain immaterial side of it. But what all of this ultimately means is that modern psychology doesn't understand its object of study. And the reason it doesn't understand it is because it assumes that the object that it studies is purely material. It puts away any concept of an immaterial soul. It tends to treat human beings strictly like an animal. And so what they tend to think is that if you can just grasp the empirical scientific side of human beings, then you'll be able to explain everything that goes along with psychology. But that's the problem. We do perform certain operations. That is, freedom of choice. How do we know freedom of choice is not material? Well, because of the fact that physical laws always determine physical outcomes of things, whereas freedom of choice, it can go one way or another, so it's not predetermined. And so the capacity for us to choose one thing over another is a sign that it's not bound by matter, because otherwise we would always choose the same thing under the same set of circumstances, and that's not always true with human beings. So the formal object, so the object of study ultimately is man, intellectually. That is, what constitutes the right functioning of his intellect. And then the formal object is looking from his intellect. And then it's looked at from the point of view. So the formal object is the perspective that we take on it, which is his health, his mental health. And by health, we mean that his intellect operates rightly, that it functions properly. The method, therefore, depends upon the formal object. But that means, therefore, you can't have a purely empirical science regarding human psychology. Because there are certain immaterial operations that we perform, certain immaterial acts, like certain kinds of thinking, like the concept of truth is something that we grasp immaterially. You know, you don't see the actual truth going down the street. You know, there goes truth. Because truth is something which we know independently of matter. And so, because there's not a material thing called truth. So that means, therefore, that when you're looking at studying human psychology, you have to look at it from the right point of view. Otherwise, you're just going to get things wrong. And that's what modern psychology has done. They have treated man in such a way that he's not viewed as having an immaterial soul or any type of immaterial operations. And so they tend to look at him from a purely material point of view, and that has determined their method. So their method is one of the empirical sciences. So they try and measure it, measure his reactions. They try and figure out biochemically, if we can just manipulate the biochemistry in his brain, the person will be perfectly healthy, which I'll have a few things to say about that later. But in point and fact, we know that that's not always the case. You can put people on medications and they don't seem to get too much better in certain circumstances. But in point and fact, there are certain things that we do. There's certain freedom of choice. One of the things they've discovered, too, is that you can actually change the material disposition of your brain, the material operations in your brain, just by the choice that you make in your behavior. And this is something that they've known. You know, if you think a lot of depressing thoughts, your brain begins to adjust itself. That's a dictum in the scholastic age, that the body adjusts itself to the operations of the soul. So that means if you think depressing thoughts, your brain adjusts itself so it can be depressed all the time. And then they say, well, see, depression is a material problem. No, it's not. That can be part of it. It could be the type of thing that someone has an indisposition. But in a lot of cases, it's the particular choices that they've made that have led to this kind of a thing. They've also discovered the same thing with lying, that lying actually changes the brain structure, the actual wiring in your brain. The other thing they've discovered too, and this is one of the reasons why I tell people, keep your children away from television, they have found that children who watch large amounts of television, 2 to 3 hours a day, under the age of 5, it will cause brain damage because of the fact that the brain at that stage is not wired to handle the rapidity of the images that occur on a television. So it's another good reason to read a book rather than to watch television. But the point in all of this is because modern psychology looks at human beings as purely material, it means that most of modern psychology, it's not a valid science. Because in order to be a valid science, you have to have a knowledge of the thing through its causes. Well, the fact of the matter is there are certain immaterial causes and certain things that occur in us immaterially which cannot be empirically measured, which is what they've tried to actually take. And historically, up until the advent of modern psychologists like Freud and the like, psychology was always considered a philosophical science because of the fact that there were these operations which we perform which are immaterial. But then when certain people came along and just considered us an advanced animal, they figured, oh no, it can be just empirical science, and then that's the end of it. And then because of that view, they've changed their methodology. So their mode of proceeding in the psychology has been an abysmal failure. And this is the thing that's happened. One of the things that they've done is because of the fact that they got off on the wrong footing, because they don't understand how beings are designed and how they function and the interrelationship between their faculties, like their emotions and their intellect and things of that sort. Because they don't understand these things, it's been an abysmal failure. I mean, their success rate. In California, they decided to do a study, and they took 1,000 people off the street that had psychological difficulties, and they put them in front of psychologists, and they noted the success rate. And then they took people just off the street and said, put them in front of the person that was mentally ill and says, here, help this individual. The people off the street had a far higher success rate than the trained psychologists. And that actually tells you something. It tells you they don't know what they're doing. You know, if I go and I study, if I go to study what it is to be a veterinarian, and then somebody sticks me in front of a car and then tells me, okay, now help this person, I'm going to be a disaster. I'm not going to know what I'm doing. I'm going to start pulling wires and things aren't going to run right and that type of thing. And that's what's happened in modern psychology. The empirical method cannot deal with free will and intellectual knowledge, and so they treat him like a man. John Watson in his text, psychology as the human, as the behavioralist views it, says, quote, "The behavioralist, in his efforts to get a unitary scheme of animal response, recognizes no dividing line between man and brute." So in other words, usually most psychologists tend to think us as advanced animals. In addition, there's a systematic rejection of God. And this is partly due to the fact that many of the psychologists were immoral men. If you want to know the lifestyles of people like Freud and Jung and the like, you can read Libido Dominandi and Degenerate Moderns by E. Michael Jones. And they'll give you an insight into why these people began promoting certain things in their psychology and why they tended to ignore things like God or just act like God didn't exist and things of that sort. Jung makes the observation that in his two essays on analytical psychology, he says, quote, "Simple-minded people have, of course, never separated these things from an individual consciousness because the projection of gods, demons, etc., has not been understood as a psychological function, but the projections have simply been acceptances of reality, that is, they accepted them as realities, and their true character never recognized. Not till the Age of Enlightenment was it discovered that the gods did not really exist, but were only projections. They were disposed of, but the psychological function which corresponds to them was by no means disposed of," unquote. In other words, what he's saying is, now remember, Jung is one of the principal influences of convents in the last 40 years, that there was no God, there was no immortal soul, and that this was all just a projection of man's desires or wants or needs or what he thinks, and so these things didn't really exist. That means if you take that perspective on human beings, it's going to determine how you psychologically form them. For example, let's say suppose somebody undergoes an abortion. Now, one of the things they've found is that most women, the trauma in abortion is so severe, it usually takes 8 to 10 years for them to really come to terms with it. And that was one of the difficulties that they had in some of the studies, is the fact that it was hard to get a real read on the psychological health of women after abortion because of the fact that it took years for the women to actually come to a reckoning in relationship to it. But they would feel guilty very often, and what modern psychology would do is try and say, well, there's no reason to feel guilty. There's no God, you know, moral, there's no such thing as really morality. This is just something that you did, and so don't worry about it. You know, just move on with your life and accept that this is just the way things are. And so in the end, they don't really help people because why? Human beings have a natural inclination to guilt when they do something wrong. They have a natural, in other words, it's built into our very structure by God to want to worship Him, to want to have communion with saints and angels and things of this sort. Now, it takes revelation for us to know how that all works. But we have these natural inclinations towards that, and modern psychology has thwarted those things, and it's made people feel even worse. And usually, when my experience is usually when modern psychologists get done with most people, they're usually worse off than when they started. In fact, one of the modern psychology has not produced what it claims, that is, mental health. The success rate of your average psychologist is less than 10%. Less than 10%. That's the success rate of your average psychologist. If he uses drugs, it's a little bit higher. But this often just merely masks the problem, and it doesn't really solve the problem. And to see, you know, the fact that there hasn't been much success, you can read the book Psychological Seduction by William Kilpatrick. And he also has another one called The Emperor's New Clothing, which tells the story, and this is just, it talks about the fact that there has not been much success rate among them. Modern psychology is not scientific because it would produce the effect of mental health much like empirical scientists can produce experiments in their lab. In other words, just as a scientist, a chemist can take oxygen and hydrogen, put flame to it, and it'll explode. In other words, and they can do this consistently. If, in fact, psychology was an empirical science, they should be able to produce the same kinds of effects repeatedly in people, and they can't, which is a sign that it's not an empirical science. And this brings up fraud. The fact of the matter is, and it's kind of funny, Freud used to refer to his patients as goldfish, because once you got them on the line, you just bilked them financially. He admitted this. And that you, in fact, one of the things that psychologists very often do is they will try not to make the person better. because the longer you keep them on the line, the more secure your job is. And there was a priest one time who told the story of the fact that there was a man who was in a war in Vietnam, and he had real difficulties. And so he said, look, I'd like you to go to this Catholic psychologist. And the guy was there for 7 months, but the priest said, because he doesn't have any money, I'll pay for it. He said, well, this is starting to get kind of expensive. So he told the psychologist, he said, can you kind of hurry this along? It's taking a little while. Well, 3 weeks later, the guy was cured, quote unquote. So the moral of the story is that there's a question of fraud. If they can't produce what they say, then why are they saying that they can do it? In fact, most psychologists tend to make people more dependent on them rather than psychologically healthy, which makes people more self-sufficient and independent of them. Then, it is not scientific because it does not take into consideration the causes of mental health or illness because of its empirical method. And there's certain things that affect our mental health. For example, demonic activity. Not all people who are mentally ill are demonically influenced, but there are. Demons can influence people psychologically. There's a thing called obsession, where they can barrage the person's thoughts, that is, if God allows it. They can barrage the person's thoughts, and the person literally can, lose a certain amount of control over himself psychologically. There's also God. God can influence us through grace, that is, he can cure people. There's also sin. Sin has certain effects, one of which is darkening of the intellect, which we all learn from our Baltimore Catechism. And so the more you sin, the more likely you become, or the more prone you become, to psychological illness. Then there's, of course, angels. Angels can actually help you to become psychologically healthy or help you to maintain it. So the point is that there are certain things that can affect certain causes of our mental health, which they preclude. Now, if they preclude them, then how can they make the claim to know the causes of mental health? In other words, how can they make a claim to be scientific? So when you boil it all down to it, because they don't even understand their object of inquiry, that is, the human intellect, and because they don't understand the various causes that can go into it, they don't really have a claim to it being scientific, ultimately. In other words, their claim of, we're an empirical science, this is all very scientific. It's not a true claim, and the proof in the pudding, as I mentioned, is they can't produce what they claim. Modern psychology is dangerous because it was founded by atheists and agnostics who deny God and see the explanations of religion putting aside natural law, that is, aside from God designing us in a certain way and things of that sort. Modern psychology is also very dangerous because it encourages sin. For example, they'll often say, very Freudian, that most psychological problems is because it's a frustrated sexual libido. And so you just have to give free rein to that and then you'll be fine. Well, and this is why very often they'll encourage people to engage in things like self-abuse, sodomy, and the things of that sort. In fact, many of you might have heard, there's a book called the DSM-4, which gives a list of all of the psychological illnesses and their cause and effects and what to do with it, etc. But homosexuality was removed from it a little while ago. And there's been a big push. I think they even removed pedophilia from it. And this is a story which most people don't know. In fact, I was telling people this the night before. I was watching TV one time, and when I was watching it, I was starting to look for a gun. I was getting so irritated because of the fact that there was a bishop on the television who said that the problem wasn't the fact that the priests were pedophiles. The problem was that the victims squealed. Now think of what that means. Now, you need to understand a bit behind that. He was telling you what the psychologists had told the bishops in closed session when the pedophilia scandal broke. Because the psychologists for years had been telling people, pedophilia is a perfectly natural behavior, we just have to get people accustomed to accepting it. And that's a sign. That tells you the danger of it. On the flip side of this, and I can tell you this not only because I've written books on psychology, but because I deal with the fallout as a priest, the fact that molestation for people who are younger is very damaging psychologically. It takes years for people very often to get straightened out from it. So what are some of the practical dangers? Psychology seems to affect almost every aspect of the church. I mean, most of you probably know that already. Homilies today are more concerned about people's feelings than the teaching of doctrine. Pastoral theology used to be about the administration of the sacraments and how to the spiritual side of things, that is, how to tell people how to get to heaven. I mean, that if you read the the pastoral theology books, the books that are labeled pastoral theology from before about 1950, they all almost deal with the administration of the sacraments and certain aspects of the spiritual life. But that all shifted now to where pastoral theology is all psychology. This has left a gap in most priests' knowledge of the proper way to lead people to heaven by the right administration of the sacraments and other elements of sanctification. And so very often priests come out of the seminary and they don't even know the basic of the mechanics of the spiritual life. In fact, in the Diocese of Lincoln, which is considered one of the most healthy dioceses as far as the presbyterate goes, I gave just some basic things on how the gifts of the Holy Ghost affect us psychologically. And at the end of it, some of the priests were stunned. They said, "You know, we didn't know any of this." They're sent to decent seminaries, so it's even worked into even some of the good seminaries. Seminary formation, that is their character formation, that is what they consider good and bad, as well as their intellectual formation, is heavily imbued with psychology. And what does this mean about our future clergy? I mean, most of them know more about, you know, modern psychology than they actually do about what the saints say on how to save your soul. The governance with the church is more concerned with how people accept the teaching rather than the teaching of the truth. As I mentioned, the pedophilia scandal is a product of modern psychologists saying that it's not a problem, you know. Moral teachings and practice have collapsed because modern psychology does not give full recognition to the natural law or to religion, which would teach a proper code of conduct. Then this is particularly the case, again, in the area of the Sixth Commandment. In other words, there is a real problem in because psychology has gotten into it. Morality, it's not an issue of morality. It's not about teaching people the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. It's really just about teaching people to come into communion with their emotions and how to get along with people, not to hurt people, help people to feel emotionally happy and things of that sort amongst each other, rather than charity. I mean, if you ask the average person what charity is, they usually, the first word will be out of, you got to be nice. Well, that's not the traditional understanding of it. The traditional, even though meekness, which is also sometimes labeled as mildness, is part of charity. But charity is love of God and love of neighbor for the sake of God. And we all know this with children. There's certain times you can't be nice to them if you're going to ultimately be charitable to them. In other words, if you really love them, you have to discipline them. So in other words, it's even affected our moral teaching within the church. The other problem is I mentioned immanentism last night. And immanentism is, again, the philosophy which tends to make ourselves the principle of judgment about what is right and wrong and what to do, what we think about God. And that means, and this is what happened, the philosophers after Kant said that basically taking Descartes, because Descartes said, the first thing I know is my own thought. And then he says, and then I know reality. Well, that makes my own thought the principle of judgment of, you know, what I think, ultimately, and not what's real. Kant comes along and says, well, I can't even know reality. So really what I'm left is in my own thought. Then what happens is Kant says, well, the only way you can really know God is he's outside of us. So in the end, I can't really know God. And so they usually credit Kant with the credit of being the father of modern atheism. But the upshot to that means that religion gets transposed, what religious doctrine gets transposed from reality to interiorly. And that means that religion really gets boiled down to psychology. Because it's really about my psychological reaction, what I think about it, and that type of thing that is really the important factor, rather than some objective teaching that's taught to me by a magisterium. And so as long as immanentism reigns in the church, we're always going to be dominated by the psychological approach in pastoral theology. Modern psychology is now accepted by the legal system, which is why it is possible to lock people up who are religious or things of this sort. They say, oh, those people are nuts, you know. And I think people are starting to see that more and more, especially in relationship to the whole schooling thing, like in California and in Germany. You know, basically the state wants certain control, and usually that means that they want to be able to indoctrinate your children, that is, apply certain psychological methods to your children in school, which they can't do if you have them at home. The legal system is a conundrum because psychologists cannot come to a consensus because the psychologists don't know what is their proper object. They can't agree on what makes you healthy. They can't even, do you know there is not a single psychological manual produced today that will give you a definition of mental health. Save the one that's over on that table over there with my name on it. But that is a real serious thing. I started digging around to try and find, when I was writing these things, I want to say, well, I want to see what they say the definition of mental health is. Not a single one. They'll give certain descriptions of certain things, but they'll never give you a definition of it. Now, if you can't even define the thing, upon what basis do you have to sit in a court and tell them that this guy is healthy or not? You can't even define it. Now, if I was a lawyer, I'd be making all sorts of hay over that one. And then, so they drag them in as an expert testimony, and then what happens? Well, then the defense side brings in their expert, and before you know it, nobody knows what's going on because nobody can agree on what constitutes whether this guy is really insane or not. Because of the museum of modern psychology on children, they are permitted to sue their parents now. Then there's the impact statements by victims in courts. Now, sometimes those can have a proper place, but they're often just imbued with just an emotional, sappy, psychological approach in order to maximize the damages so that they can receive more money or things of this sort. So instead of looking at things objectively, I mean, I can see that, you know, they would need the judge or whoever assigns the sentence should sit down with the family and find out, okay, what has really happened here to the family and that type of thing. And that's because it's necessary to get an objective analysis of this. But when it's just this sappy, sentimental thing, it's all about who can massage the right people at the right time psychologically in order to get the emotional effect they want. The use of modern psychology and understanding psychological illness has occurred in order to avoid prosecution. Some guy will claim, you know, oh, I'm psychologically ill. And then they'll go find some manual who says, oh, yes, if this happens to a person at this age, then he's psychologically unhealthy, even though there's nothing wrong with the individual. Then there's modern educational methods, which are thoroughly imbued with modern psychological approach. There is the whole problem, of course, of self-esteem in modern psychological circles and how this has actually degraded academic standards. Nothing drives me more nuts. I always tell people, you know, even though I have 6 degrees, I tell them I shouldn't have probably hardly any of them because of the fact that part of this is because of the fact that I grew up in a family where most of my siblings were far more intelligent than I was. So that always kind of keeps a person humble, of course. But in the past, the academic standards, most people barely finished high school, if that. And then out of that, only a few were suggested, you know, you're very bright, maybe you should go on to get a degree in college. And then out of those, maybe 1 in 50 went on to get their master's. And then out of those, maybe 1 in 20 got a doctorate. Well, now we all know doctorates are a dime a dozen. And that's because the academic standards are so low that the cream of the crop, you know, as my cousin says, it's no longer the cream of the crop at the top. When he got his doctorate in biochemistry, I said, well, congratulations. He says, it doesn't mean anything. He says, all it means is I stuck around long enough for them to get sick of me and give me the degree. And then I started reflecting on that. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are in these academic programs. But the thing is that the psychology has brought this about. Why? You can't hurt people's feelings because you'll cause them psychological trauma. So, yes, 2 + 2 = 5 is perfectly fine, Johnny. Here's your star and go home. You know, it's that kind of a thing. But then there's also the problem of self-esteem. You know, once in a while, I'll get people to come to me, you know, for spiritual advice, and they'll say, you know, Father, I really suffer from low self-esteem. I say, good. That's a good thing. And then they usually stand back, and I said, and this is why. Because as we all know from the teachings of the saints, any bad thing that's in us is our own fault, and anything good is the result of God working through us. So if there's anything to be esteemed, it's what God is working through us. So and that's the point is that you should, when we look at ourselves, we realize how wretched we truly are, and that's called truth, you know, and that's the thing, one of the things that modern psychology hasn't gotten a hold of. I had this one professor, he comes into class and he says, you know, they're teaching pride in the universities now, and they call it self-esteem. And that doesn't mean, of course, that you go around, you know, denying the virtues or the perfections you have. It's just that whenever you look at them, you must always refer them back to God, because otherwise you'll think a bit too highly of yourself. But this whole thing of, you know, the big book, the book about, you know, Johnny can't read and all these problems that are occurring because, you know, 2 + 2 doesn't really equal 5, even though that's what they're telling people, is, as I tell people, yet another reason to homeschool your child. TV and modern practices of advertising are thoroughly imbued with behavioralism. You know, the United States really took what Watson said, hook, line, and sinker. And what Watson did is Watson discovered that there is a mechanism in human beings, it's only a part of it, that there's this thing called association. So if you put one thing next to another thing, we'll make this association, right? Well, this is why you have the beautiful, scantily clad girl standing next to the beer, and then the guy thinks, oh, yes, I'd like that beer. Well, the point being in all this is that in the United States, we realized that that is a great marketing tool, and Watson made his money off of being a consultant for advertising firms or getting that kind of thing off the ground. And so that has affected virtually everything from the advertising to TV. TV has become particularly good at making, you know, they'll get the person who's had an abortion or something really bad, or they're living in a really bad state, but they're suffering and they're really trying, and so there's this spin put on it, and so they look like they're really good people and that type of thing, and so they're really good at massaging this side of our psychology. And this is very dangerous. This is another reason I tell people, keep your kid away from the TV. Then there's the government using modern psychology in order to do social engineering. For example, this is seen in the role of sex education and now global warming, although I do like the fact that because the global temperatures were down globally last year, surprise, they're now calling it global climate change. So, but it's this, they use the ecological things, and don't get me wrong, I totally agree with Holy Father. You take care of the environment because we're good stewards of it, and because if you don't, it affects other people, and that's why you take care of it. Not because it's an end in itself, but because it's there for our use. And it's just a matter of being prudent. But on the other hand, you know, it's one of those things that they use these things to try and manipulate people's behavior. Global warming, you can't drive, you can't drive, you can't drive, you know, that type of thing. They're also affecting people's understanding of the family unit and the role of women in society. And so it's affecting us on a variety of different levels. In families, you have the Dr. Spock approach to children discipline. Never mind the fact that God told us, spare the rod, spoil the child. I mean, it's God, the one who designed it. Here's the manual on how to take care of your kid. And then we ignore that and follow Dr. Spock, who says you should never discipline your child because it's bad. And then, of course, they do these studies and say, oh, spanking leads to problems later. There's a problem with the control group in those studies, or they tend to focus on certain things. And this is one of the things why modern studies, especially the stuff that's based on statistics, you can get almost anything you want out of these studies anymore, depending on how you control the situation or to control the questions or things of this sort. This is a sign that people are listening actually more to psychologists than God, partly due to the fact that modern psychologists have inserted themselves in the place of God. In fact, B.F. Skinner in the book Walden 2 basically considers himself the Messiah, that if people will just simply follow me, I will cure everything. The role children play within the family insofar as there is exaggerated attention given to what they want, never mind what they need morally, spiritually, or psychologically. Then there's the modern psychology has waged a systematic war against the traditional family hierarchy and unit. And this came in the way of blaming parents for everything. You know, sometimes people come to me and they're like 25 and they're like, my parents did this, my parents did that. I'm like, I don't care. You know, you're an adult. It's time. You can now make you out of yourself what you want. You know, there's that whole thing. It's based on, it's based on Thomism. That John Paul II writes this thing called the Acting Person. He says, you know, that we can actually determine what we become through our actions. And this is something that modern psychology has taken away from people. Oh, it was your environment, and because your parents were bad, this is why you're such a basket case. No, you're a basket case because you chose to go out and live immorally, is very often what you have to tell people. And this is also another sign that they're denying free will, but there has been this erosion of the family unit and an attack on the authority and the hierarchical structure within the family, particularly against parents. So what does this mean? Well, virtually every aspect of modern life is now imbued with modern psychological manipulation. Parents, I think, need to be really aware of this if you aren't already. So how do you avoid it? Well, it's quite simple. First, turn off the TV when you got children. That's the first thing. The second thing is homeschool, because you can determine what your children actually learn and how they learn it. The second thing is, and this is something that most people don't know, the Catholic Church, and this is one of the beauties of the documents, even in the last 40 to 50 years, they used to refer to the Church as the expert on humanity. The Church has built into its teaching, because God directs it and guides it, and it's also the case in Revelation, that, as John Paul II says, God reveals man to himself. In other words, we're a bit of a mystery to ourselves because of original sin dumbed us down significantly. And so God had to come and say, look, you're not doing this quite right. This is how it functions. So the upshot of it is this. If you follow the traditional Catholic teachings about morality, because the morality will help people to think the right things, that is, custody of the mind, keep your mind off certain things, you know, that type of thing. It will teach you the right mode of conduct. It will teach you, if you just follow the traditional Catholic moral teachings, and if you follow the spirituality as is delineated by the lives of the saints, and you lead a good moral Catholic life, because of that, the whole deposit of faith, grace builds on nature. The whole deposit of faith, which the church has received from God, is built directly on human nature. So it perfects it. So if you simply follow the Catholic teachings, you will be mentally healthy, generally speaking, unless there's some physiological cause. But and that's one of the things too, is keep your children, generally speaking, away from psychologists. Why? Because the paradigm shift, because psychology has been an abysmal failure, the shift has been to stuff that works, which is drugs. But the drugs just mask it. So and this is what some of the psychologists, we've been discussing this, there is a subtle shift more towards psychiatry, where you just load the person up with drugs in order to mask the problems or to get them under control, rather than actually curing the problem. Whereas, as I mentioned, in many cases, not in all, but in many cases, people can actually change their brain chemistry back by performing the right kinds of behavior. So if people just lead good moral Catholic lives, if you raise your children with good moral Catholic lives, they are less likely to suffer psychological illness, and so are you. Because why? It will perfect you intellectually. Because why? Faith is something that's infused in the intellect. St. Thomas calls it the first purification of the intellect, because it purifies our understanding of God, and as a result, it purifies our understanding of ourselves in relationship to Him and things of this sort. So if you lead just a good moral Catholic life, you probably won't need to see a psychologist ever. And then I'll just end with this. There are some really good Catholic psychologists. The psychological books that I've written are written and based from St. Thomas's point of view, and they tend to follow this. And they have a phenomenal success rate. Not because I wrote it. They were having phenomenal success rates because they were following St. Thomas before they even met me. But the upshot of it is they usually recognize that if people would just return, particularly Catholics, oh, by the way, you do know that before Vatican II, now it's not because of Vatican II, but before Vatican II, because of the outlet of confession, there were less Catholics in mental institutions than any other denomination in this country. After Vatican II, there are now more Catholics in mental institutions than any other denomination. Well, that tells you, if you lead a Catholic life, you're less likely to be have psychological difficulties. But the psychologist said to me, he said, you know, if people were leading good Catholic lives, there probably wouldn't be any need for us, that is, the good Catholic psychologists, who follow a Thomistic understanding and not the empirical method. Most of them would jump through the hoops in order to get it because they knew it was all nonsense, in order to get out there, and they have a high success rate. But and I said, not necessarily. You will need you for the more extreme cases. But as to 99% of the cases, you're right.